for What's Up with oppositionalist MP Paul Goldsmith.
Morena, Paul, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Morena.
Morena. Well, we've got some big topics to talk about today. Of course, the leaders' debate was last night between Judith Collins from the National Party and Labour's Jacinda Ardern. So that's kind of, I guess, framing a little bit about what we're talking about today. But we are going to talk about National's fiscal plan, a bit about tax cuts, and also National's proposed border strategy as well. It has felt like a bit of a marathon this election season, so thank you for joining us so early this morning. I do want to start with the not-so-good news about last night's Colmar Brunton report, which shows that Labour is well ahead as both the preferred government and Jacinda Ardern as Prime Minister. Can National come back from this, do you think, Paul?
Yes, we can. The number one word for the 2020 would surely be volatility. Things have been bouncing around and anything can happen. And I think when people have the chance to really focus on the choice, clear choice that we've got coming up to this election between a government Labour Party, which is thinking in terms of getting the economy back on track. It's thinking about higher taxes, it's thinking about adding costs to businesses and wasting money on all sorts of weird and wonderful schemes. Whereas National's putting forward a very clear alternative, which is, you know, lower taxes, $3,000 in the hand of somebody on the average income, and to stimulate the economy, and a real focus on jobs and quality infrastructure. Time when Auckland is being reminded very powerfully of the need to continue to invest in quality infrastructure. So I think the basic sort of messages are there, and they will resonate with New Zealanders once they turn their mind to the reality of the election coming in a few weeks.
Well, I did want to talk a little bit about National's fiscal plan because there has been some controversy over the numbers here. Stuff's Thomas Coughlin is reporting that the irritating hole, as you called it, in your fiscal plan of $4 billion might have blown out by another $3.9 billion because your party's double-counted your transport program. Is he correct?
No, he's not. The money's all there. It's in different pots of money. I've been moved around because we've done things differently in the preview, but we've got every dollar that we need to in our scheme comes from, some of it comes from capital allowances, some of it comes from the land transport fund, and some of it comes from allowing NZTA to borrow. He's got a little too carried away there. No, it doesn't. We don't accept that at all.
So how do you account for the hole in the first place, the miscount in the first place, Paul?
The first one was a simple error where the government changed its path to invest in the super fund and they didn't announce it and we didn't pick it up. These things happen. The budget documents, the pre-election fiscal update documents from the government had printed with Treasury and all its people, had one figure in there that was out by $5.9 billion, which they had to correct. These things happen, but what need to focus on is, you know, the substance. The substance is we've got the prediction from the Treasury that there's going to be 100,000 jobs lost in the next 2 years. And so who's got the better plan to save some of those jobs and create new jobs? That's what really matters, not pedantry around the particular labels put on particular sums.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the tax cuts that National has been floating, and you, of course, just mentioned this earlier. This was a big topic last night in the leaders' debate as well. It was something that Judith Collins was pushing for, tax cuts for middle-income earners. She's pointed out that we are in a historic recession and we are going to be facing enormous infrastructure costs ahead. Can we actually afford these tax cuts that National's proposing?
Well, not permanent at this stage, they're temporary, so for 6 months starting from December. And the point is the economy is in a real recession at the moment. We shrunk by 12% for the second quarter of the year. So the argument is that we need some stimulus to help get the economy moving. Now, you can continue to have more of these shovel-ready projects that the government talks about, but the problem with them is that they take a long time to start and they're very political, and you get things like the Green School and various pet projects. The fastest way to get money into the system is directly through the tax system, so from the 1st of December, people have got more money in their pockets.
That's
a short-term stimulus, but you've still got to have a plan over the next decade or so to get on top of the debt in preparation for the next crisis. And that, there is a big difference between our two fiscal paths on that front.
Why go for the middle income bracket rather than lower income? Because we know that when lower income earners have more cash in pocket, it stimulates the economy, there's better spending. Why not support the people on the lowest pay bracket at the moment?
Well, because people who earn $50,000 or more pay 80% of the income tax. So if you had to have tax relief, then the bulk of it goes to that middle income area who are paying most of the tax. And, we believe it's good to put more money into their pockets, but it's also right that people should have some relief from their tax so that, they have more money to spend. So we're targeted at middle income New Zealanders, the teachers, the nurses, the people who are starting off in their career, who are working hard, and should deserve to keep more of their money.
Do you have supports in place for people in that lower bracket of income, though? Because there are people who are really, coming in hard at the moment.
Yeah, there's an enormous amount of support in the New Zealand economy for through the welfare system and through the various transfers that we have with working for families and housing supplements and allowances. The broader tax and benefit system of New Zealand is extraordinarily redistributive. We as a society, spend a huge amount of money supporting those in need, and that's absolutely appropriate. But it's also appropriate at a time when we need to stimulate the economy. One good way of doing that is putting money back in the hands of middle-income earners so they can get out and spend. I'm down in Queenstown. I was in Queenstown last night for a finance spokesperson's debate, and which was all good fun, but, this town is really struggling. They don't have the tourists coming in, and, they need domestic tourists to come in and help. And if we put some more money in their pockets, in the pockets of Aucklanders, just a few of them might come down and make it a bit easier for Queenstown. And that's how money starts to circulate through the economy.
Well, speaking of tourism and borders and things like that, let's talk a little bit about National Party's border strategy. National's announced that they want to boost the capacity of managed isolation facilities by allowing private accommodation providers to join the government-controlled network that currently exists. Now, we've seen problems with this arise overseas. We've also seen some issues of leaks in our own sort of network, which have now been, pretty well plugged. But is there a sort of a fair concern that putting things in a private capacity takes away some of that security, perhaps, that is a tight system and that there is accountability there? What would you say to those concerns, Paul?
Well, look, I mean, the private sector can manage things effectively if they've got good systems in place. I mean, people fly in, aeroplanes at high speeds, at very high altitudes, and privately controlled planes. So it all comes down to the quality of the oversight and regulation.
But we have seen issues with private security firms in New Zealand, as well as overseas. I'm thinking of Victoria. Their second wave of the virus pretty much started from leaks through private security and private border firms. Are you not concerned about those potentials there?
Well, we're absolutely concerned to make sure that the border is safe and secure, and mistakes have been made by private sector and public sector. But the point is that we need to have some path to increase the flow of people being able to get across the border, not just returning New Zealanders, but there are many areas where people are needing to get skilled workers on to do particular tasks, and the economy and jobs are being held up because people can't get through in a timely fashion. Also, it would make a huge difference to the economy if we could start to get some international students and as well as that, people to pick fruit. And there are lots of things that need to be done and that require people to come through the border. And so if we're just sort of continuing on the current path, which is ruinously expensive with everybody going off to hotels and no flexibility in the system, then we're going to slow our recovery and make it more difficult to create the jobs that we need to get going. And so what we've suggested is a whole range of things, making sure people are tested before they come, setting up an agency which is focused on the logistics of dealing with the border, having proper Bluetooth systems for testing and tracing that will reduce the likelihood of these further crushing lockdowns that we've had in the past, and then allowing more ability for different people to make specific arrangements. You know, that if you've got isolation facilities and you can prove to this new agency that we've put up that you can do it safely. And
do you imagine the timeline being between setting up a border agency is quite the big task, and you know this is an ongoing situation. What do you imagine the timeline between setting something like that up and being able to get that conversation between a potential border agency and possible private sector, you know, management facilities? Do you think that could happen enough?
Look, I mean, everybody would have liked it to have happened yesterday, but we can only move as quickly as we can. If we are fortunate enough to form a government, then we can get on with these things as quickly as we can, because it really matters. But we don't want to be still in the similar situation to where we are at the moment in a year's time, because you know, we'd be in real strife. So we've got to have a plan and a path. I think we've got a credible one. What with the contrast with the government is, seems to me to be very complacent and very slow moving, and we can't afford to be doing that at the moment.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Paul. We always appreciate having you on the show. I hope you have a lovely rest of your day, and we'll talk to you in about a fortnight.
Thank you very much.
Cool.
All the best.
Speak to you then.
That was What's Up with oppositionalist MP Paul Goldsmith.
Thank you.